and the rest of the world. It is the fact that as a result, as the very result of the new development of productive forces which American capitalism has known during the Second World War and in the post-war boom essentially determined by armament production and by what is called the new industrial revolution, by a big stepped-up rate of technological innovation, the basic self-sufficiency of the American economy in regard to dependence on foreign raw material has been more or less definitely abolished. In the whole historical period, which goes from the American Civil War till the Second World War, and which witnessed the growing competition between imperialist powers on a world scale, this was the decisive trump card which American capitalism had in competition with all its competitors. Whereas Britain, Germany, France, Japan, not to speak about the lesser powers, were dependent and very, very straightly dependent on import of decisive raw materials, oil in the first place, but not only oil, iron ore, aluminium, and so on. American imperialism, the American capitalist economy, was nearly self-sufficient and only marginal raw materials, which at that period played a very little role in the economy, had to be imported into the United States. As a result of the big upsurge of productive forces in the last 25 years, and also of the depletion of certain national resources inside the United States, this situation is now reversed. And for a series of key raw materials, especially oil, iron ore, and certain non-ferrous metals, the United States depend today in a growing way on imports from semi-colonial countries in the world. This is one of the two keys which explain the growing immediate involvement of the American political and military establishment with what is going on in the semi-colonial countries. It is not only a question, like it is obviously in Vietnam, of maintaining or restoring the capitalist order as the head of the world capitalist system. It is also in many places, and I'm thinking especially of certain countries of Latin America and of West Africa, an immediate vital problem for the United States economy to maintain control over key raw materials without which the strategic position of the United States, not only in case of a Third World War, but even under more normal conditions, would be jeopardized. So if we look at these two factors, the big development of export of private capital from the United States since the end of the Second World War, and this growing dependence on raw material imports from a series of key semi-colonial countries, we understand that this counter-revolutionary role of American imperialism is not only determined by political, military, and subjective considerations, but that it has deeper economic roots in the way the world economy is developing today. If we look now at the results of these two basic forces which are operating, we see that they are rather contradictory with regard to the other imperialist powers. We have a very dialectical relationship between alliance and competition between the various imperialist forces on the world scale, and this dialectical relationship of alliance and competition within the alliance is expressed in the two basic capitalist developments which are happening now on the international scale in the imperialist countries, is to say, growing international competition at the one side and growing international concentration or interpenetration of capital on the other side. I do not think that it is necessary to dwell at length on these two phenomena. They are rather well known. They are objects of big international polemics in the bourgeois world, the working class movement, the left radical movement in general, treats them marginally. But there seems to be no doubt, at least in my eyes and from a general Marxist point of view, that we are faced there with very basic phenomena which, in absence of a victorious socialist revolution in the next years in the imperialist countries, would reshape and modify very, very profoundly the very structure of the imperialist world as it is today. One of these twin and dialectically contradictory movements, the international interpenetration of capital, is symbolized more concretely in Western Europe by everything which is happening inside the common market, and which is a big subject of polemics inside Great Britain also. But the basic relationship between American imperialism and the capitalist powers, the imperialist powers of Western Europe and of Japan, follows basically the same pattern. We have, at the one hand, an attempt by American imperialism to penetrate very deeply the economy of these other imperialist countries by establishing strong, powerful subsidiaries of the big American corporations inside Europe and inside Japan, buying up existing capitalist firms in these countries also, but this is more secondary aspect of the phenomenon. We have an attempt by the European capitalists to do the same thing in the United States. A few days ago, information was published by the financial press that for the first time in the history of the United States, a combine of five big Western European banks, amongst them also a British bank, the Midland Bank, set up a common big foreign bank in the United States with 100 million capital of its own means, and which will have deposits which will probably very quickly pass the $1 billion mark. It is not a one-way street, this international competition, and the European capitalists have some trump cards in this business too. But that is the one aspect of this development. The other aspect is the attempt of which this bank fusion of which I'm just talking is but one example, is the attempt of the European capitalists to combine their resources to be able to oppose more efficient in a more efficient way American competition, and an attempt which has led to the sensational developments which you know on the monetary field, where we have today a rather unforeseen and paradoxical situation in which the American currency, at least from a purely formal point of view, seems to be weaker than the currency of the Western European, of some of the Western European powers. Now, we have to be cautious in assessing the subjective reflection of these movements, of these basic objective economic developments, subjective reflections of these movements amongst the bourgeois and petty bourgeois circles, and also inside the capitalist, in the working class movement in Western Europe and in Japan. I say we have to be cautious because we have to know that we are faced in Western Europe and in Japan, the same thing is true for both countries, for both parts of the world, with a ruling class which is extremely astute, extremely intelligent, which has gone through a historical school of ruling society of many, many centuries, much more astute from that point of view, of course, than the American capitalist class, which is rather a latecomer on the historical scene, and that this European bourgeois class is now beginning to develop a maneuver on a historical scale which could become a tremendous trap for the Western European working class movement. The European bourgeoisie, at least its most astute and intelligent wing, is today consciously attempting to use the anti-American sentiment whipped up in the European working class movement as a result of the Vietnam War, and of course correctly whipped up as a result of this, in order to further its own class purposes in the international competition struggle with American imperialism. And this, I don't know if it is already famous in England, but if it isn't, it will become soon the on the continent already famous book by Servan Schreiber has been symbolic for this attempt. What these capitalists, these European capitalists, who consciously try to use the anti-American sentiment in Europe, tend to say to the European working class movement, that is,